everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of NYMFA Alumni. This week, we're joined by a very, very special guest, the beauty reporter and critic, Jessica DeFino. She's the mind behind the amazing beauty critical newsletter, The Unpublishable, among many kind of other wonderful written works. Thank you, Jessica, for coming on. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Thanks. Well, do you want to kind of tell us, our audience, a little bit about what you do and your work with The Unpublishable?
Yeah, I'm a beauty reporter. I've been reporting on the beauty industry for almost 10 years now. I like to say that I'm like a pro people, anti-product reporter, just meaning like I don't like to center products or shopping or like buying things in my work, but just like the effect that beauty culture has on actual people, like physically, psychologically, spiritually. I started out in like celebrity media in LA after college. And then I was recruited to write for the Kardashian-Jenner official apps in 2015. And that was sort of my first exposure to like the beauty side of celebrity. And I loved that job for a short time. And then I started sort of having like an existential crisis about like what I was doing after like being in the belly of the beast and like seeing how, you know, beauty standards are like constructed and mass produced and sold to people. So yeah, then I pivoted into more critical beauty reporting, or I tried to. But once I started working in the beauty media, I realized why it's really hard to get thoughtful critique published. Like there's a lot happening there in terms of like advertisers and brand relationships and things like that. So yeah, today, like I've written for New York Times, The Cut. I have a column at The Guardian, but most of my work is in my independent newsletter, which is now called The Unpublishable, but will be rebranding shortly.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
That's exciting. That's a scoop for us and the listeners.
We love a rebrand. We love a big like rollout, you know?
Yes. It's been like almost 4 years, so it's time.
Yeah. Cool, I feel like yours was like one of the first newsletters that I saw that I was like, oh wow, she's really doing important work here.
Yeah.
And I didn't really feel like I've seen anyone else be able to talk about beauty that way, and also with such like consistency, which I think is really, really incredible.
Thank you.
And I guess kind of why we wanted to have you on this week was because we, I guess, noticed a couple different things that really seemed like the beauty landscape was being used almost as a sort of like a battlefield for different ideas. Mm-hmm. One thing we noticed was the discourse around Sephora kids, which for the listeners who may not be familiar is just basically tweens essentially and younger going to Sephora, spending money. And it's not so much like the act of the kids that doing it that blew up, but kind of people talking about it and people giving their takes.
Yeah.
So I guess that might be like a good place to start in terms of like, I don't know. Do you think that when I was thinking about this, I was thinking like, there's nothing really that new about like preteen shopping for beauty. I mean, I did it when I was a kid, but it seems like specifically this generation, their mannerisms and how they're shopping seems to have like unlocked a new level of backlash. And has anything actually changed? And are these kids actually getting into beauty earlier? Or is it more, like I said, just this conversation has changed with the times?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a good question. I think there are some exceptions, but generally, like, no, I don't think girls are getting into beauty earlier, but like so much has changed. Like the world has changed. There are like so many more products that do so many more things and just suggest so many more like unrealistic ideals that girls are like expected to meet or feel they're expected to meet. There's more marketing channels, more channels of discovery, like fewer kids only spaces. So like more exposure to adult norms. And then just like obviously more visibility of all of this happening. And I think the visibility is making like a very predictable behavior seem bizarre. And I think it's sort of like triggering some like subconscious knowing that like modern beauty culture is like out of control, and seeing it parroted back to us by children is making that clear and like sort of like making people go crazy. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think like what's missing in the discussions about this specifically is like defining the difference between childhood and girlhood. Like for children, it's totally normal to like mimic the behavior of adults and the grown-ups around you. Like that's normal, that's healthy, that's part of growing up, that's childhood. And like I think what separates girlhood from childhood is that like girlhood is a training ground for womanhood, and it's when you're like mm-hmm. you learn the rules of becoming a woman, and like you're mm-hmm. encouraged to take up this like stereotypical gender role of woman. And we're not like zooming out and discussing that like an all-consuming interest in your own physical appearance is not inherent to girl. Like mm-hmm. that's concerning. Mm-hmm. Mm. So yeah, I think that's like sort of missing there.
That's interesting. There's been like so much discourse on girlhood, but I haven't even seen it kind of broached in this capacity when talking about, I guess, the Sephora kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, there's so much reason to talk about it. I think like I said, these are not inherently girly behaviors. Like it's not biological to like want asses on your face at 11. Like it's a socially conditioned role. And I think that's where we might see some overlap in like this same age demographic is like reporting higher loneliness rates than ever. Like they're more anxious, they're more depressed. And like my theory is that like they've not been given the tools to understand themselves as like humans or even kids, but like they're encouraged to perform themselves as girls. Mm-hmm. And like there's a disconnect there between like performing girl and being yourself. And like that disconnect breeds so many of like the psychological issues that we're seeing the same like age group claim that they're like experiencing.
The style of consumption is really interesting to me too, because I feel like there is this emphasis on like a collectible nature of beauty products. Yes. And it feels connected to other trends of like Squishmallows or like Stanley cups, or just like having the same thing in a bunch of different colors, and the pressure that young people have to do that.
Well, it's like a toy.
Yeah, it is like a toy. Like
collecting your dolls, collecting like your stuffed animals.
And it also feels like a little bit better to see kids post, not products necessarily, but like rather than their image, you know, just like posting the stuff that they have. Like it just feels a little bit better than maybe like watching them do a tutorial. I think the other thing that seems to be like a point of concern is just like, why do these kids have so much money? And I think that goes into like the parenting, the online parenting battleground of just like, it is a little uncanny to see kids like holding cups from Starbucks or, you know, just like going to the mall and having these like brands that they're really obsessed over. I don't remember who, I feel like someone else has made this point, but just like, it's not really the behavior that is shocking, but just like the price point. So I feel like on Tumblr, like girls are really obsessed with collecting like baby lips or something. And that's like a drugstore product that is pretty easy to get. But like Summer Fridays lip balm is like super expensive. The Drunk Elephant stuff is like, I'm an adult woman and it's like too expensive for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does like come back to the parents, right? Because like tweens are obviously getting this money somewhere. So like the tweens were driving these trends of consumption are like doing it under the guidance of their like perhaps like elder millennial parents, who I think are like, they believe skincare is important and worth a certain amount of investment. Mm-hmm. I also think like we're living in the era of like buy now, pay later, Afterpay.
Oh my God, yeah.
Splitting up payments. So if like some of this is happening online, like I don't doubt that that's probably a big part of it. Mm-hmm. And also like cosmetic debt. Like a lot of people are in cosmetic debt. It's like trending lately. So like people are willing to go into like a little bit of debt for products and procedures and stuff.
I've never heard that term before. That's I think I'm in that right now.
It's fascinating. Like there are credit cards and payment plans you can go on for like plastic surgery, Botox. Like there's an entire like investment like credit card that's like specifically for procedures. I can't remember the name of it right now, but it like started like last year.
Yeah, that's crazy. I feel like every time I've gotten a procedure done, like the payment is such an afterthought. Like no one ever talks about it until you are like, you literally check out in this way that's so like frivolous, but it's a crazy amount. And
micro needling done, and I remember like I literally felt like I was in some sort of, I had been drugged or something, like when they were discussing the payment kind of like process, I was like, yeah, that sounds good. And then afterwards I was like, what the hell? Like I couldn't even make sense of it, to be honest.
That's fascinating.
It's really crazy.
Because they just start talking to you and they're like, so I'm going to see you in 2 weeks and then we'll like figure it out. And I'm like, okay, but is that going to cost me money? Like what are we talking about here?
They're like, you might need more treatments, but we won't know, but you probably will. But yeah, it's a crazy, kind of affect, I guess.
Yeah.
I also saw a recent article that you kind of spoke on the rise of like youth-oriented brands, like Starface, for example. I think you mentioned Bubble, the skincare that is honestly pretty visually similar to like Drunk Elephant. It's very like neon coded.
Yeah.
What do you think about these brands? Because I remember they were kind of positioned as like the breakaway from the Glossier millennial aesthetic, but I wonder, if they're actually like, you know, what's actually going on with them, basically, and are people into them, and what do you think about them?
I mean, I think people are into them. I think, like, from a branding perspective, it was smart of them. Like, I was looking up some statistics before jumping on this, and like the child skincare market, I think this year it's worth like $280 million, and in 4 years it's supposed to be worth $380 million. So it's like a huge growth opportunity. It's growing like a lot quicker than other sectors of beauty. So it makes sense that these like very savvy brands like Starface, which like their founders have branched out into so many other brands since, would like see this opportunity and sort of jump on it. I also think like a lot of what we're seeing in the young kid beauty market is coming from their moms who are like of age to become entrepreneurs and start these brands and are just very obsessed with beauty for themselves and like see it as a fun way to like pass it on to their kids. Mm-hmm. Like if you look at a couple of the kids lines that are out there, like Barbara Sturm has a kids line and she says on her website, like it's inspired by her 8-year-old daughter.
Wow.
There's a brand called Petite and Pretty that was like started by a mom because she was like, I wanted my kid to like be able to participate in the things that I do. I think the like co-founder of Jones Road Beauty with Bobby Brown just branched out to start her own kids line. I think it's called Yawn. There's rumors that Emily Weiss of Glossier might be going into the like child and baby realm now that she's a mom. So,
oh wow.
Yeah, I saw the article you wrote on baby skincare for an Ask Ugly column, and I was very shocked and couldn't understand what kind of skincare a baby needed. Like, what are the products that they're selling the babies? Like, what are they like recommending for them?
It's wild. I mean, there are like baby-sized sheet masks. Like Dior came out with like a luxury baby moisturizer, like a baby perfume. That it's so sick. Like the Dior perfume for babies. One of the lines on their website is like to evoke nostalgia for all those childhood moments. And it's like, that's for parents. Like babies don't have nostalgia. Like you're just covering your baby in a perfume it doesn't need so you can feel nostalgic for your own youth instead of like being present with your child. That's so sick.
Yeah, that's very strange.
It's such a strange feedback loop because it's like babies, actually I learned this like because my dad had kids recently, like their skin is not that great at first, but then it gets really good. And there are also things like the hair trend, like baby lights, and like it's like you kids and babies are supposed to be like what we're emulating. Like if we're pushing products on you, the baby is the grandma. Yeah. Like it's
like
very
like baby youth was the ultimate like beauty ideal, and it's like now that's not even good enough. Like the anti-aging market is expanding so much to like include actual literal babies now.
That is insane.
Yeah, even like the fact that people say, you know, like babies are supposed to smell really good, and it's not because they smell like a perfume, but it's like that, I guess, primal kind of thing. It really is a crazy feedback loop. Like you said,
the normal baby products have like that good baby smell, like baby powder and stuff like that is the smell in question that we love. You know,
that's true. Well, I wanted to know if you had any thoughts on this like incredible turn to skincare specifically, because I do think that makeup was the central kind of beauty product that there was a lot of content surrounding in the early 2000s and then the 2010s. And then there was this whole 180, and skincare is now the number one product that everybody is kind of like focusing on, and makeup is almost seen as like a secondary thing. Do you have any like thoughts on why we've made such a big turn to skincare?
I mean, that's such a good question. I think there's so many reasons. I think one, like skincare sort of allows people to like indulge in this interest in beauty without feeling like superficial. It like sort of sidesteps some of the moral judgment of heavy makeup because like it's marketed as care. Like this is self-care. This is like a health and wellness thing. So I think people are more likely to want to invest in that because they get like the feeling of participating in beauty without the feeling of like being superficial or vapid. I think there's also a lot of room to like intellectualize beauty standards in skincare, like the science of skincare ingredients, like having this like secret language, this scientific language to explain like why you're using a particular product sort of like elevates it. So it like loses some of that like frivolous nature that's like associated with beauty products. Yeah. And I think, I mean, it's it's just part of like the natural trend cycle. Like we always go back and forth between like no makeup, makeup and skincare and like a very like high effort, high maintenance look.
Yeah, that actually ties into something I actually think I kind of mentioned to you when I spoke with you to interview you for an article I was writing. But yeah, I was interested about this idea of like beauty nostalgia as well and kind of what that might say about our current time. I've noticed especially people being very nostalgic for really recent periods of beauty. Like we talk about the year 2016 a lot on this podcast. It always gets brought up in culture, but like particularly with the high glam look of the 2016, you know, like the full foundation, the contour, the highlight, the naked palette, all of it. And I guess thinking of that pendulum of low effort, apparently beauty to kind of more high effort look, do you think people being nostalgic for that is just a product of that cycle, or is there like something else kind of going on here at all?
I mean, I think there's definitely part of it that's just part of like the very accelerated trend cycle. Like things move so quickly that like we're nostalgic for things that aren't even 10 years old at this point. I think some of it's like a pushback to like the Glossier clean girl aesthetic thing, like the faux natural beauty. Yeah, I think the like pendulum like is swinging back in the direction of excess. And like there might even be, you know, speaking of like 2016, like some sort of like political undertone to it, like a rejection of the idea that we need to hide all of our aesthetic labor, which is what skincare does, right? Like you're putting in all this effort and it's invisible. And I think there's maybe some push to like put in all of that effort and have it known, like I am putting in this effort. I'm not going to be ashamed of all of the work that I'm putting into my appearance, like even like exposing the construct of like beauty of like, no, it's not inherent. It's not natural. Like I'm putting the work in, like I'm spending time and money and effort on this and you're going to see it maybe.
Yeah, I love that point because in that essay that I wrote for System that I interviewed you in, I spoke with this other interesting person and influencer named Laura Violetta actually, and she does these incredible kind of beauty looks that really like emphasize color and I suppose like the traditional word would be kind of like an editorial look. So obviously it's not like 2016 because 2016 was about kind of like a really bronzy, sexy, smoky look. But I find myself kind of like gravitating towards her content. I think it's because she's not trying to obscure all of that. She's like, yeah, I'm gonna wear like yellow eyeshadow or like a like bright fuchsia lip, and I think that's really appealing to me. So maybe that I can feel that like psychology you're mentioning.
I think that like really aligns more with this idea of like beauty as like a form of self-expression or art. Like if you can't see any of it, like what are you expressing? Like how is that artistic? It's like more confusing. But yeah, when I see something that's like clearly high effort and a little more avant-garde or editorial, I resonate with that more too, because it comes into alignment with what we're saying beauty is, which is more than just like physical appearance, right? And it like for some reason to me, like that feels like a more true use of beauty in those terms.
Yeah. I would love to see more of that maybe coming out of this. Another thing I want to talk to you about is the rise of indie brands that are kind of positioned more as self-expression focused, like Isamaya, who's obviously, that brand is obviously led by the cult British makeup artist Isamaya French. And it's really seemed to like capture the consumer imagination. They've had several products that have made a big splash, like their like penis shaped lipsticks were really big. And also there's like kind of other arty brands that I think have now been bought in by conglomerates like Byredo. I don't know for sure, but I think that is true. And I was wondering like, what makes these brands successful? Like, is there any hope here for that kind of self-expression, or are they still kind of like part of you know, what we're talking about, this machine?
I think, okay, so I think there is hope for self-expression there, but I think that's mostly in like how the products are used versus the particular products these brands are putting out. Like to me, like starting a brand like this, like is, you know, still very much like part of the machine, because I don't think the products are necessarily doing anything particularly innovative. It's like the packaging that's different and the marketing that's different and avant-garde and speaking to people. And like in a way that sort of just like reinforces the main point of beauty culture, which is just like rearrange your outsides. Like that's what counts. And like I loved the penis-shaped lipstick, but I hated the marketing of it. I wrote about it at the time because like some of the words that they used, they were like, it redefines beauty, like this didn't exist before. like the media was calling it like for the female gaze. I think yeah. Samaya said it was like a celebration of self and a call for connection. And it's like, it's just not, it's just a lipstick shaped like mm-hmm. a dick. And it's okay for it to just be that. Yeah. Like we don't have to pretend you're like calling for connection. Like that's not what it's doing. It's just a lipstick in like a weird package and like, let it be that. I think I would respect that more yeah. than like trying to turn these things into something like that they're not. So like ultimately yeah. I think it's like how you use the product, not necessarily like a new brand that uses like the same sorts of products that are already out there.
Well, that's something I really like a lot about your writing. It's something that you talk about a lot is sort of like the moral imperative of beauty, how mm-hmm. there it does seem like there is some sort of moral imperative behind being beautiful that's like encoded yes. within the culture.
Yeah.
It seems like more present now than ever before. I don't know if it's just because I'm paying more attention and this is just, you know, now I'm seeing more advertisements, you know, that are targeted towards me than I did when I was a kid. But what are some of, like, I know this is probably a really broad question, but like, do you have any like thoughts on why there is such a moral imperative in our culture to be beautiful?
Yeah. I mean, it's so embedded in our culture, like from the beginning of time, really. I think in this particular moment, people are like almost, maybe there's like a level of comfort to like having such an easy moral code, an easy mm-hmm. visual moral code of like how to be good and be treated well. I sort of see this like as part of just like the infantilization of society. Because when you think of like beauty as goodness and like evil as ugly, like that brings up like cartoons for me, like Disney, like Ariel was beautiful and like Ursula was like fat and ugly. And like Snow White was beautiful and like the old ugly like crone witch, you know, as her foil. So it's just like a very childish and easy to follow like moral system. Mm-hmm. And I think like it's hard to live in the world today and that makes it easier. But like we see it like, I'm thinking there was a tweet a while ago that went really viral about like Anne Hathaway being beautiful. And it was like, this is how you age when you're not problematic.
Yeah.
Or even like Amy Schumer recently was like on some late night talk show and she had like gained some weight and people were like, you're ugly because you're a Zionist. And it's just like, it's easy for people to like grab onto that, even though it's just like not true at all. Like yeah. there are very beautiful people who are horrible and there are very like ugly people who are wonderful and pure. So I don't know.
That's a really good point. It just feels
like childish.
Yeah. We do live in a really complex. That's like, yeah, I think having a simplified moral code is something that like, I think it bleeds into a lot of other aspects of society too, that like as it gets more complex and as we have like so much more information to dig through.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
For some reason that makes me think like the Disney duality of like beauty and ugly. I feel like there's something in between of like Maleficent and Angelina Jolie that's like are very into like scary, intimidating, striking mm-hmm. beauty at the moment. And I feel like that is that the kind of like third thing. Yeah
mm-hmm. It's like beauty as deception.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah,
it's a paradox, but there's research that shows like people or women who wear heavy makeup are judged as like morally inferior to others. And so like, yeah, that Maleficent thing brings that up for me, because like there's also this level of like overt beauty as deception, as mm-hmm. morally wrong, mm-hmm. as evil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially with like older women too, who are like visibly made up. I feel like that is like one of the, like the Cruella kind of like mm-hmm. Donatella Versace like look.
Ooh, yeah.
That's I feel like that's quite example. In right now.
Yeah.
Well, in terms of beauty icons or maybe anti-icons and stuff, we were also wanting to talk to you about some of like the criticisms and controversies that have been boiling over in the beauty influencer community. Mm-hmm. It seems like the beauty community has always been rife with conflict, but it's really yeah. come to a head like recently. It's been really hard for me to engage with beauty content without coming across some sort of like grand controversy or drama that takes like hours to figure out. And, you know, that's always been the kind of the case with the internet and beauty content. I wanted to know if you had any thoughts on why beauty content pairs so well with like drama specifically and kind of like conflict and infighting, you know, and then maybe why it's increased more in recent times.
Yeah, I think this is such a good point. And it's something I come up against too, like when I am more critical of beauty industry stuff, like people respond as if I'm attacking them personally. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because like, I mean, beauty is so personal. Like beauty is a like a form of identity or like figuring out like who we are. And there's like the marketing angle of that, right? Where it's like beauty is pushed as like self-care, self-expression, self-love. There's like taglines like you, but better. Like mm-hmm. Alicia Keys has soul care, but it's actually just skin care. Like there are all these like marketing things that conflate like the self and your appearance. Mm-hmm. But there's also a scientific aspect of it that I find really fascinating. Ooh. So like the skin is inherently tied to the brain. It's called the skin-brain axis. It's like this network of like nerves and neurons. And so we place like inherently a lot of psychic weight on our skin and presentation. Like your skin is the mediator between the inner world and the outer world. Mm-hmm. Like the brain and the skin talk all of the time. Like for instance, if you're embarrassed and you blush, like that's a feeling and then it becomes your skin. Or like if you're stressed and you break out, like that's a brain skin reaction. And like the skin is actually like our brain's only visual way of realizing like we are in a body. Like you're not just like a floating consciousness, like you are physical, you are here. It's the only way we can see that. Mm-hmm. That's where tattoos come from. Like on the other end of the spectrum, like that's like the urge to like self-harm or cut. It's like this desire to make what is like intangible and inside part of your physical reality and make it more real to you. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think just like anything having to do with beauty, anything having to do with like how we present ourselves and what we put on our body is like so charged. Like there's so much of our like own like sense of self and identity tied up in it that like sometimes it just can't help but like combust into strange fights. I also just think like the project, like becoming physically beautiful according to like a certain set of beauty standards, it's like it's inherently a project of judgment, right? Like we are compelled to do it sometimes because we know other people will judge us based on what we look like. And then we're judging ourselves against other people and like adjusting our appearance accordingly. Mm-hmm. And so it just like doesn't surprise me that like some of that judgment bleeds over into like personal feuds. Like judgment is part of the thing.
Yeah, that's so amazing. The skin brain.
It's like, so fascinating. I'm obsessed with
that. I've never heard of that before. It's also, I think there's like been a content style that's like, it seems kind of native to TikTok, like the rise of these like cunty male dermatologists who their whole thing is being like, here's what you're doing wrong, and like you don't need 40 skincare products, you just need CeraVe, and like that felt like an attack to me a lot of the time. You know, there's like, I feel like the push to like make everything so catchy and instantaneous, like every video starts with like, here's why you're doing your brows wrong,
yes,
like do this not this.
That's
type of
such
thing
a good point. Yeah,
and that I think creates like a nervous system reaction in people. Yes. To be like, I'm not doing anything wrong, you know.
Yes, no, that's such a great point. Like that's part of why I'm just like, I'm not on social media anymore. It was really like difficult to present my work there, and there were always like a million well actually's the comments, and I was like, it just, it's not the place for nuance.
It's not. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think you're right, like of course that breeds conflict.
This is like a side point in the greater discussion, but the brain and skin connection is interesting because I was doing some research for like a different project, and I saw that there was some kind of janky brands that have almost like hijacked that a little bit. Like saw this brand talking about like the emotional connection between skin and the mind, mm-hmm. but it was like creating really weird products, like emotional security cream.
Yes.
Or
oh my god,
like
I know
that.
Exactly the brand you're talking about. Okay, they, like, okay. They also sell a book on attachment styles, like with your serum.
Wait, secure attachment.
Secure
cream.
Attachment.
Actually, I made
serum.
A video about it, yes, so okay. Maybe you saw that. But yeah, attachment serum and stuff like that. And I was literally like,
disturbing. Yes, and like that's what brands do, right? Like they're taking this like incredible scientific information and like corrupting it to sell products, when mm-hmm. really it's like, if we were interested in the brain skin connection, like it would open up so many more pathways to like take care of the skin outside mm-hmm. of products. Like one of my favorite like learnings about this connection is that actually meditation reinforces your skin barrier. It helps your skin retain more moisture, and so like you literally, like meditation is moisturizer.
Whoa.
It's so insane. It actually like shuts off inflammatory pathways. Like there's so much there.
That's crazy. That's that sounds like a copy line they would steal and like put on a product.
It'd be like meditation in a bottle.
Moisturizer. Yeah. Meditation in a bottle. Yeah, for sure.
Yes.
I'm so glad you've seen that brand because it really came up for me.
I've been like trying to write about them for years, but it's one of those things where I don't know if you feel this, but I'm just like, it's so straightforwardly bizarre that it almost feels like, why bother writing? Yeah. Like, are people really buying this? I guess they are, but.
Yeah, no, that's true. Because like I said, I made like a TikTok talking about this brand. And then usually in the comment section, there's like a bit of a more nuanced discussion. But everyone in the comment section was like, this is whack as hell. Like, what are they talking about? And I was like, okay, I don't know who they're selling to and who's buying it.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess also, back to the overall theme was like, another reason we really wanted to talk to you was like, we mentioned, we've just been seeing so much conflict play out through the beauty space. And specifically, like, once again, nothing new, but it seems like everyone's getting way more frustrated, disillusioned, and speaking out about the overconsumption and excess that is represented by influencers, specifically through the beauty space. Something that happened recently is another brand trip, of course, like a ultra luxe brand trip led by Tarte Cosmetics. And yeah, people have just been really upset. You know, people have really been taking to the Duet on TikTok, like giving their opinion, like stitching videos. Mm-hmm. And obviously we have, like, you know, this backdrop of recession and inflation and just a general feeling of things not being very good for people. But yeah, I guess everyone's always trying to kind of like weigh in and say, like, what's the next kind of thing in beauty influencing? But I guess I really am curious if it's this distrust and disgust, honestly, is gonna escalate, and will brands and influencers like be able to react to this? Is it just gonna be like how, you know, we have a cycle of minimalist beauty versus maximalist beauty? Are we gonna see people scaling back? I don't know. It just feels like an interesting time for these displays to be happening.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I don't know. Like, the whole Tarte drama, to me, like, obviously it's like a gross display of excess at a time, like a really dire time in human history. But also I just get the sense that, like, it's something to get mad at, something people feel that they can affect because they can't actually affect the real issues, like, that are happening in any sort of material way. Yes. It's like an easy way to, like, feel like you're being, like, social justice-y or, like, stretch your morality muscles. Like, but, like, I personally don't see this, like, being a big deal long term. Like, people, customers seem, like, pretty okay with overconsumption in their own lives. Like, Shein is huge. Temu is huge. Like, 10-step skincare routines. Like, I don't think people are really grappling with overconsumption. It's just like the visibility of a brand doing it is triggering something, but, like, I don't see it, like, causing, like, individuals to scale back. I don't know. It's also like, it's happening alongside this idea of, like, there's no ethical consumption under capitalism, and therefore I can consume anything I want because it doesn't matter anyway. So it feels like those are, like, two extremes that I don't know how they're going to, like, reconcile or play out.
Yeah. That's what I was really, when all of, because Tarte brand trips are always kind of controversial, and every time one of them happens and there's a sort of explosion, I always felt like it was like redirected political energy or something, that people, you know, if there is some sort of sense of, in an ideal world, right, if you felt like certain companies were being extremely unethical, you could appeal to, like, your government to, like, put some checks and balances on that company and make sure that they have some sort of responsibility to their consumers, you know? But we're losing so much trust in institutions, or they're losing our trust, to the point where you kind of are trying really hard to control the way that these, like, companies are giving us their products, but they have, like, no responsibility towards us in that sense. Like, they just want to sell us something, and they might tweak their external, like, marketing stuff, like, a little bit, but at the end of the day, like, it's part of, like, a larger system that, like, is almost, like, uncontrollable, and you need, like, a centralized force, like a government, to, like, crack down on the way that they're, like, functioning, you know?
100% I think that's, like, the missing piece right now is, like, there is no regulation on these types of things. And, like, I don't know, when you were talking, something that comes to mind is, like, we're expecting, like, corporations to behave like human beings at the same time as we're expecting, like, ourselves and other people to, like, behave like corporations, like personal brands and things. And so there's this sort of, like, collapse of that, where we're, like, trying to hold corporations to, like personal moral standards. I don't know. I don't know what I'm thinking, but I do think there's, like, a weird relationship there.
That's a really good point. Yeah, like people kind of have, yeah, because that's another thing too, is that the same amount of backlash is held up against, like, I think there's, what's her name, Michaela
Nogueira. Oh my god.
She, there's some sort of drama with a small biz, her not platforming a small business when she promised to, and like it was the same amount of backlash towards her as Tarte received for their brand trip. And like, I'm not trying to like scale harm and stuff, it just kind of felt all like really difficult to navigate, because I was like, there's just so many factors here that are being extremely oversimplified in this moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I just want to buy lipstick, or like, I don't know, like I want to go to CVS and get like a blush without making myself feel like I'm supporting some sort of like foreign war or something, you know? Like,
yeah.
I do think it feels like an exercise thing, like you said, like a moral exercise. Like, people realize that this is the one thing that they might have some control over. Like, you know, with a bit of collective effort, we can get Tarte to issue an apology. But I feel like people think that they're like waking up and like taking control and being like, like a lot of people are doing the vote with your dollar thing, being like, I won't be buying anything from Tarte, which does feel like effective. But it's also like, all we're doing here is telling these brands for free how to sell stuff to us better. So like,
yeah,
they're all just going to figure it out. And then we're just going to start buying the stuff again. Like, what does it really mean? And also, what does an apology from Tarte mean? Like, you're totally right that an apology from a person means something if they've like wronged you. But like, Tarte is going to tell us sorry for like the private jet fuel that they burned. Like, they already did that. It's also, yeah, it does feel like it changes with the times, because like the critiques in the past were like, the batch of people on this trip are not, it's not diverse enough, you know? Like, it's
you're not
like
extending this very, opportunities to like everyone.
Yeah, it's this very limited image of what like a beauty influencer looks like. But to see that we're like kind of beyond that at this point, and we're just like, this is wasteful. But I also think that, like, Sam and Biz and I were talking about this, like, while this was going down, sending each other comments that were getting a lot of likes and reactions that seemed to be resonating with people. There were so many comments that were like, I'll buy from Tarte if they take firefighters and teachers on a brand trip next time. And I'm like, okay, but
so
like,
funny.
Why would they do that? What? Like, these are beauty creators. They're a beauty brand.
Oh my
like,
God.
It's not like they're like treating
beauty
creators.
It's not a charity.
And,
it's
yeah,
not
I'm like this is like, what you're looking for as a nonprofit.
It's like, they're like the Red Cross or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were like, Tarte needs to like buy teachers' classroom supplies. And I was like, okay, but they're selling stuff to people who consume beauty, you know? Like, it would be a nice thing to do, but it's like not the same initiative.
Right.
But I feel like
it's
that's
like
also
maybe our government should be like funding schools.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's true. Well, I just feel like people have really, that was a really successful turn in marketing, which I don't know when that happened, but it is just like charity marketing. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's like such a trope in Super Bowl ads specifically. I feel like it's a very like American thing to expect some sort of charity from like companies that they, you know, they will absolutely never outweigh like the harm that they're doing just by like kind of
right.
You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, there's so many brands there like now that are incorporating that like into their baseline. Like, what I'm thinking of right now is Selena Gomez, like Rare Beauty, doing like this mental health initiative, and it's like, that's great. I don't know why you can't just like donate to mental health organizations like without selling beauty products. But also, it's like the website talks about like how beauty standards affect like the mental health of women and girls, and they're fighting this, and at the same time it's like, you're selling foundation, you're selling concealer, like these products have like almost no artistic or expressive purpose. They're specifically to cover up and say like something's wrong with your face.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, so many of these brands who are participating in some charity initiatives are like completely offsetting whatever good by selling the products they sell.
That's so real.
I could totally see there being like, I guess what you're saying, Lexi, there's this like crowdsourcing of now all the marketing people at Tarte are going to know exactly kind of how to redirect their brand or how to respond to this based off of all of the feedback. But also, I feel like there's going to be some sort of brand that's like, we're the anti-influencer brand and we don't send anything to influencers. Because I also was thinking about Lush, who a couple years ago quit social media. Mm-hmm. And totally went off of it. And I guess that was in 2021. So it's been like a long time. Wow. But I could definitely see a brand using this as like an inflection point to try to get ahead of how people are feeling.
There was a brand a couple years ago. I think it was called Brandless. And it was like, that was their whole thing. Like, it was like white packaging, black letters, like completely basic, like sans serif font. And they were like, we don't do marketing. We don't do weird packaging. Like, we're just going to send you the moisturizer.
Wow. They also sold a bunch of other stuff too. Like, I feel like there was a brand that literally sold, it was like Costco, but everything was like in a white box with black text. And I'm like,
what was
this
that?
Is literally the most like graphic designer thing I've ever seen though. Like, this is like what people go to graphic design school for. But I do think you're right. I think like the through line of like, when you're talking about the Isamaya copy, just being like, you know, I think people are just getting really exhausted with copywriting and like the bullshittiness of it. And I do think there have been so many brands that are like anti-beauty, you know, like be creative and like break the mold, whatever. But I do think there needs to be one that's like on some like really third wave feminist thing of like, you have to wear makeup to work. So like, just buy it, you know, like it's not the best version of you. Yes. It's not you unleashing your inner artist. It's just like, put it on. We know you need it. Like, just do it.
I would respect that so much. I would
too.
More.
Yeah. Yeah, I would too. Yeah. Isamaya was like, I saw like a Helmut Newton campaign. I thought it was really cool. So I decided to like inspire this like lipstick based off of that. I'd be like, that's so sick. But yeah, it's the copy industry is like really in a bad place right now.
It's just such an overcompensation because like we all know that like the beauty industry is not good for women.
Yeah.
And just like the mental gymnastics that brands are going through to like try to counter, like offset that. I don't know. I think we are really about to hit like a breaking point with it. And maybe it's going to involve some firefighters and school teachers and stuff.
I feel like it's going to involve more people subscribing to your amazing newsletter.
That's true.
There we go. To be honest.
Yes.
I guess, you know, thinking of on the brand side of things, the other conversation that I honestly feels even bigger than the Tarte excess influencer conversation is like just about celebrity beauty brands. Mm-hmm. And there's probably also some crazy statistics about like how much that market is worth, but it's obviously super saturated. But I don't know, like it makes sense to see a decline now, but I don't know what they would pivot to. I guess we've seen them more going to like wellness, like Kourtney Kardashian, or even hair has become more of a thing because it's not quite as saturated and as, you know, creating skincare and color cosmetics. But I am curious if we go all the way around and go back to perfume. I don't know. It's just
yeah. I mean, we just had like some pretty big celebrity perfumes. I think Bella Hadid is doing a perfume. Kylie Jenner just did a perfume. I do think fragrance is going to be like the big thing this year for everything, celebrities also. I think celebrity beauty is actually not very profitable, I think. There are like a couple of standout brands like Fenty, Kylie. But I think we're gonna see like a decline there. My theory is that the new celebrity skincare brand is the Celebrity Book Club.
Oh my God.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow, Kaya Gerber on the beach.
Yes, but exactly. But it's not like they're like abandoning beauty. They're just like applying beauty culture to reading. Like they're aestheticizing reading, like have this cool book and take a picture with it.
Yeah.
I was thinking of this because Dakota Johnson, I think, just started a book club. And she gave this really like odd quote to Bustle about it. She was like, people need to be like thinking about deep things instead of their face serum. And I was like, that's so like old to be like beauty versus brains. And like, if you read a book, you won't care about beauty. Well,
that's what I was wondering about. Whenever, you know, you look at like kind of like celebrity brands ahead, I think like Reese Witherspoon did some sort of like crazy book club type thing that made her a billionaire. I'm not business savvy enough to like understand how that happened. I probably could figure it out. But like,
well, what they're doing is like they're using these books in their book clubs. Like Reese is doing it. There's a bunch of other people like Emma Roberts, Emma Watson. And then they're optioning the books and they're turning them into movies.
Oh my God.
Oh, I see. Like this, yeah.
Giant business, like
the Dakota thing is so interesting because it feels so incredibly dated, right? Yeah. Being like, what if we weren't also obsessed with being beautiful and you picked up
just
a
like
book,
read a
but...
book instead? Well, I thought that was so funny because like I just feel like so many modern beauty standards can be traced back specifically to a book and like the public reception of Lolita.
Like, oh, interesting.
Like beauty culture like is books too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really true. And also with her specifically, it's like she's like third generation Nepo baby as well. Mm-hmm. So it's like she really tries to, I think, position her public image as like very serious. Yes. And like, I'm a real worker here. That's so it makes sense point. That she's like mm-hmm. applying that seriousness to her business venture. But
yeah.
Why did celebrities get into beauty in the first place? Is it just because it was like supposed to be profitable for them?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, celebrities were, I wrote a story about this in like 2019, I think. So uh-huh. It's like traditionally like the beauty celebrity relationship was celebrities became faces of a particular brand mm-hmm. and they got paid like for that campaign, whatever. And I think at a certain point mm-hmm. when it became easier to like white label a brand or start up these beauty companies without like too much effort, it was just like, why am I being the face of somebody else's brand when I could take all of the profits? You know, like yeah. why would you like be the face of L'Oreal when you could have your own skincare line and it would be more profitable and you would get everything? And then you can also like, you're in charge of your image. So where other brands place limits on like who else you can work with in terms of like being a face of a competitor or whatever, like you don't have to put limits on yourself when you own the brand, right? So you can sort of still like use your face to sell other things. I think J-Lo is a good example of this. Mm-hmm. Like she is the face of lots of things. She did like Hims and Hers, and then she had J-Lo Beauty. Oh, wow. And she had a perfume and she like licensed that out. You know, there's more freedom, I think.
The thing that is so yeah. frustrating to me about this is that like we're seeing instances where, for example, like Kim Kardashian is doing beauty again. She like shut down KKW Beauty for a while and is now like bringing it back. But also Makeup by Mario has his brand. And so we have two mm-hmm. brands that are saying like, this is how you get the Kim Kardashian look.
Yeah.
But obviously everyone knows the truth is like he was doing her makeup and creating this look before he had the products from his brand.
Right.
Like everyone was just yes. using MAC. Like that's why it's crazy to me that like to see the celebrities doing it, like the message is a little bit simpler. They're just like, oh, like I'm a beautiful person, like associate this beauty product with my image. Mm-hmm. And then there's like the artistry side of it, which I feel like is getting more popular because it's a bit more serious. Yeah. That's like mm-hmm. the Makeup by Mario, the Patrick Ta, the like Pat McGrath to an extent, where it's like, this is how yeah. I have created this look on so many different people. And this is like the essence of celebrity beauty that you see on red carpets and like everywhere on runways. But
yeah, that's such a good point.
It's just so crazy to me because I'm like, this was just like not necessary. Like you did this no. without all of this stuff and like the retroactive continuity of being like, this is how you create the look. I'm just like, you guys were using like Krylon and like MAC products to do all of this before you made these brands.
I think a great example, a recent example is the Pat McGrath look for the Margiela runway.
Yeah.
The like mm-hmm. porcelain doll look, she showed on like Instagram Live, whatever, how to get it. And it was like the product of like four or five different products like squeezed in a bowl and like yeah. sprayed on the models. And then she's like, but I'm coming out with my own one.
Exactly.
So like she's creating something that she didn't actually use on the runway that went viral and like profiting off of that when like it's just going to be a completely different product.
Yeah. I feel like we need to get back to like, I don't know. Kevin Aucoin also had his own brand, but I feel like he, like seeing those, like that generation of makeup artists work, they were just like mixing a bunch of random shit on the back of their hand mm-hmm. and being like, this is what is working for me.
Well, I think that's like sort of the pathway that these artists are like claiming is like, well, I mixed and matched everything. I would DIY and like, here's what I would do if I didn't have to DIY.
Yeah.
But like doubtful. I don't know. I got a press release for a new like Makeup by Mario palette the other day. And they were like, it's groundbreaking, never before seen. And I opened it up and it's a nude eyeshadow palette. It's like 12 different shades of brown. I'm like, nobody needs
yeah.
this.
It's also just like the like endless greed. Like I feel like people keep
yeah.
doing this meme of like, this is the greed they talk about in the Bible. Of just like brands will start with like one, like Kylie Lip Kits were a good example where it's like, there's something and it's like, a very limited range mm-hmm. and it's super exclusive. Like Glossier also created this hype around like, you know, yeah. four products or something. Merit Beauty is kind of similar. They're like, these are all the things you yeah. could ever need. But then it's like, okay, then why do you keep making more shit? Like, why is there a new release from you every
exactly.
2 months? Like, I thought this was everything, you know?
The only brand that I've really seen do that well is Vintner's Daughter, where they've had that like active botanical serum out for I think almost 10 years. And since they've launched in like 10 years, they only have I think 3 products.
That's amazing.
Wow, that's incredible.
And like, yeah, I respect that because they are staying like pretty true to their message, even though it's probably really difficult to like not keep producing products and making new things to sell people. But there are some brands out there that like do it well.
Yeah, I feel like I get a lot of copy and like ads that say like meet the serum that has like a 5,000 person wait list or that's like sold out 40 times. I'm like, do I want to be on a wait list? Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
I just want to buy something.
I felt that way about Rode Beauty because they kept kind of like selling out and having wait lists and stuff like that. But I got some for free. Not from them, but and I was like, what the hell? Like, it just did not compute in my head. And it really ties together a couple conversations, like about the impact of the celebrity within the beauty space and being able to like move that kind of wait list.
Well,
but then also, the disconnect.
To interject, a lot of that is just made up. Like,
they lie.
I've like, you know, been involved with beauty brands where like the things are not sold out, and then they put sold out on the site, they create this whole like buzz, and then like a couple weeks later, that's how you know it's like production doesn't happen in a couple weeks, production doesn't happen in a couple days. If something's like truly sold out, it's gonna be a really long wait. And just like I've like personally been involved with like many brands that just fake a wait list and fake a sold out and like create this like faux excitement.
That makes so much sense. Yeah. I'm a simpleton. Yeah. I was like, you're really sold out. Like, the warehouse is empty.
Yeah. Here we go. It's true.
What do you think about the Hailey Bieber lip gloss phone case?
Oh my God. I hate it so much. I hate it so much. It feels like back to like the childish beauty thing, like just buying yourself like a little toy, like a little accessory for your doll. Like a new dress for your American Girl doll or something. Like, it reminded me of like the Stanley Cups and like how people had those like, you know, hats for their Stanley Cup straws. Like, it's just so silly to me. It's so silly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had this point that I think I made in a previous episode, which was like, I like the idea of if women want to buy kind of superfluous things, it's like beautiful trinkets and that sort of thing. Yes. Not something that has like a utility to make you more beautiful, like so that you can like put on your peptide lip balm easier and then also have it in your pictures so that people like them more. I don't know.
Yeah.
It just like made me depressed.
This is like category of products for products. Like, you treat product that you love as like your baby and then you like buy stuff for it. Like, even the Kindle, which is something that is such like an anti-product. Like, I keep getting these TikToks about like Kindle accessories and like how to trick out your Kindle. And I'm like, I don't want to pimp my Kindle, you know, like, this is just like, it's supposed to be like the most rudimentary piece of technology that you like read with.
Yeah. That's so wild.
Very strange.
Yeah. It's like products for products that turn us into products. Like,
oh my God.
Hailey's whole thing is just like glazing yourself to look like a donut.
Yeah. And also like, she's in every selfie you take with your phone case. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
She's literally Big Brother.
She is.
That was so surprising to me, like her takeover, because I just always thought she was such a flop. But
yeah, I think she's like bland enough to project onto, you know?
Yeah, she's a blank slate, a mirror,
We could see her as like the opposite of what we're talking about in terms of like self-expressive beauty. Yeah. It's like her beauty is about being beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is pretty much it.
And I also think because there's that conversation of like, people will call her bland and whatever, but then it's like she still achieved something to a lot of people is the goal of beauty, which is getting your dream husband, getting your kind of
the fanfic,
that lifestyle. But I guess we talked about that in the article as well, about like kind of the rise of everything tasting like gummy bears caramel and that sort of thing.
Every beauty ad is just like some type of birthday cake. They're using cake for everything now.
Yeah, I just got an ad for fruity lip gloss, fruity cereal lip gloss or something.
Wow.
That's the protein powder market all over again.
Oh yeah, that's crazy. The sour gummy protein powder. Yeah, that also feels like tied into like the infantilization thing of because I loved Lip Smack when I was growing up, and those like delicious tasting like chapsticks that you would get at the Dollar Tree that when I was a, you know, a 7 year old or something. Like, that was like my favorite product. And I don't remember who said this, I don't know if it was said on the podcast or I read it somewhere, but it was that like somebody had said that like confection beauty products are like a way to kind of like offset diet culture kind of like impulses.
That was me.
Okay. That's late. I think about that all the time. I'm like, oh my God.
I mean,
I didn't even know that was you. That's like so funny. I'm like,
well, it was for the essay that I wrote and I interviewed here, and then I definitely sent you the essay.
Okay.
Like, look at this. I love this person. Yeah. That was Jessica. Oh
my gosh. I like love that. Yeah. You exist in my mind rent free like every day. I think about that like literally every day.
That makes me so happy.
Yeah. No, that's such a brilliant observation because it does feel like, yeah, like, especially with the Hailey Bieber thing, like how she's started this sort of like confection-esque, and it's very different from the confection-influenced beauty products of the 2010s, like Bath and Body Works and stuff, which felt
like
a lot
more
like
Jessica Simpson dessert treats. Do you remember those?
Yeah, that was a crazy time.
Yeah, the minimalist confection is quite, it feels like diet culture adjacent, you know?
I mean, it's like we're seeing so much like food adjacent beauty at the same time as we're like injecting ourselves so that we don't crave any food at all.
That's so scary. Yeah, the lines that you generously spoke for that article, I seriously was like obsessed with them, and I was like, you have to keep them all in, but of course they did it.
Because
you were too real,
you know. That's my problem. That's my main problem.
Yeah, the confectionery thing is interesting to me because I'm like, okay, it's one thing to like use the imagery of food to like sell stuff, like that's very common. It's like a almost sex sells type of like sensory, very psychological trick. And then the like second layer of the like, you know, you're smelling this amazing treat, but like it's lip balm is another thing. But one thing that I feel like is starting to disturb me is the like application of it to trends. Like we used to have these makeup styles, like e-girl makeup, even though it was like definitely a look, it felt like it had some type of tie to like a group of people, or like even roots in like alternative subculture, like goth makeup, whatever. But the fact that like the makeup trends now are like latte makeup, strawberry makeup, I'm like,
strawberry
what
makeup.
Group of people does that represent? Like, what does it say about us? Like, it makes me think like, okay, maybe the makeup self-expression thing is like real, because like this is not a form of self-expression. This is like brown makeup that you're being like, do I want a
chocolate
latte right now?
Makeup.
Like the application of it to that is like starting to drive me a bit insane.
No, it's so true. Like blueberry glazed nails and like milky jelly cleanser and all of this stuff. But yeah, I think, I mean, that makes me think of, I mean, I was researching this story that I actually never finished writing, where it was like mid-pandemic, people had like stayed home for a while. We weren't using makeup. And then all of a sudden, like people started using it again. And I saw like all of these posts that were like, I finally feel like a human.
Wow.
In makeup. And I was like, I wanted to research that feeling. Like, why does makeup make us feel more human? Like, is there any part of that that's like true? And so like in researching the history of makeup, like a lot of it goes back to like community and tribes and signaling like your place within a specific tribe or like your role in that community. Mm-hmm. And like that is expression. It is self-expression, but it's expression for the benefit of others, to like the benefit of connecting with others. And like, that's what, you know, like the e-girl makeup makes me think, like punk makeup makes me think. It's like a signal. It's like you're expressing yourself, but it's for other people. It's to connect with other people. It's to like find your community or people that you will connect with in other ways based off of like certain aesthetic markers. And yeah, you're like so right, like strawberry girl, who, like who are you connecting
who
with
is that?
What purpose is that serving in like your life?
It's like too obscured, because it's like you could probably kind of infer what they might like they might be into Hailey Bieber,
like,
and like
things?
Drinking out of water bottles and stuff like that, but it's too distanced from anything that I guess is actually a basis of a meaningful connection. Is there any other questions that you guys had, Sam or Lexi, for Jessica?
No, I don't think so. But I just want to say your work is so amazing. I was like binge reading it and couldn't stop. And I was trying, I needed more and more. I can't wait to like see where your Substack is going to go, because
thank you
so
much.
Was so brilliant. Yeah, there's very few voices in beauty that are approaching it in this sense. And I think we really need this mm-hmm. in this moment. We need you, Jessica.
Thank you so much. I mean, that means so much coming from you guys.
Yeah, the critical beauty also, studies is so needed.
I just saw you guys in The Drift the other day. Oh, I was like, oh my God, that's so cool.
Was
so nice.
That was a huge surprise, but that was so sweet. Really? Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't know about it. And that's I guess one of us just saw it online or they tagged us or something. Yeah. And it was like the nicest read of the show, which was so cool.
Yeah, I loved it. I was like, oh, I'm so excited to talk to them. I was excited before, but obviously, you know, once The Drift co-signed.
That was so sweet of them. Yeah, that was like, and then the words were so gorgeous. I was like, wow, poets are like abound. You know, like,
yeah, what you're doing. Recommend your whole Substack for sure. The whole newsletter is amazing. The one about working for the Kardashian app, though, was such a major hit. I would recommend that to anyone. So yeah, we're excited to talk about that.
That was a project
with our listeners. It was just so it was like a beautiful narrative piece and very evocative and very behind the scenes of like content creation for this, like, I guess a lot of what we talked about today is like people as brands, people as corporations, corporations as people. It was really all about all of those things. So yeah,
the making of.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was such a pleasure. I learned so much through speaking with you. Yeah. And I know.
Yeah. Thank you for your thoughtful questions.